Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Fill My Eyes with Poetry. I hope everyone had a great week, and I hope you have a better weekend to follow. I know, I'm such a creature of habit, and I cannot change my ways. Hey, Rex, how are you tonight?
All righty, what's doing?
Oh, you know, not much. And hello, Pam, how are you?
Oh, I am doing great. Good to hear you
back
both.
In
how
are
you doing?
Yes, I'm doing good.
You got your computer back.
Yeah. Ain't that
Yep.
She's a live wire today.
I am feeling good.
Mhm. Yeah, I am. I'm glad you're back. I'm very glad you're back. I won't have to sleep through shows anymore and have people going, "Oh, where is Phil?" Well, you know. Yeah, you know, it gets a little rough on me, you know. I'm old. I'm old, Pam, I'm old. I can't keep those hours you keep. Oh, my God. So happy Friday, everybody. We had a very good-looking – see, I'm getting ready to fall asleep again. We have a really good-looking board tonight. Lots of poetry. We got a bunch of sound clips, which is always, you know, welcome and wonderful. Let's see. What else is new? What else is new? know. You know, it's just a calm Friday. I had a date with my handsome blue-eyed blonde, and that was a wonderful thing. And, you know, lots of fun for a couple hours tonight. I liked it. So I come home feeling...
That is really cool.
Oh, silly, yeah. Yeah, it was good.
It's so sweet.
What's that?
Oh, I said it's so sweet.
Getting
to go to the dance.
A couple hours was enough. He got to run around a little bit. He kept coming back and checking on me. He was cute. He was really cute. So anyway, what a day, what a day. I'm glad it's coming to an end, winding down. I like that better. Oh, God, that's terrible. I'm so sorry. Not the company. It's definitely the hour. Anyway, anything new in your world? Dex, Pam, anybody?
Oh, I wasn't 100% sure who you were asking. I finished a book for the first time in like over a decade. I finished a book. Yeah,
that's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome. What were you reading?
That's my excitement. How about you, Rex? What's your excitement?
Just some rain today.
Rain.
Well, that's always good for the garden.
Yeah. That's about it. Yeah. It's never a whole lot of fun, though, but it's good for the garden. I agree. Now, me, myself, I would much rather have a nice dry day with a hose in my hand. Why not?
Mm.
Oh, definitely.
It sounds like one of those Budweiser hats with two beers in the pocket and a hose in the mouth.
Oh, there you go. That's the way to do it. Now you talk. Not really. I don't like beer, but anybody who likes beer would appreciate that whole idea.
Well, I'm sure you can set it up for cocktails.
There you go. Mm-hmm. I give you that. Yep. Put some gin and juice in that hat. Would be good. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Well, I don't know, but I guess I should get the party started because I don't know. And I have to, we have out of the first four poems on the board, three of them have audios. So that's really? So I'm going to drop down a few and try and start there and then go back up again. So Rex, I'm going to put this first one up for you by Daniel Deschino. And if you wouldn't mind, that would be.
Hollow Bones by Daniel Deschino. And the doomed mortal sting, cacophonous of soul, as death plays the flute of all control. The darkness and chaos, a harmonious sound, life folkloring deep underground, with hollowed bone and stretched dried skin, woodwind, percussion, symphony begins. Music is reflection, harmony, perfection, to each his own, conductor's inflection, to each his own. Any poem. And Pam, you can pick it all.
Well, I really like this. His use of dark and kind of surreal imagery obviously fits very well with the artwork. And I remember using that artist before in contests, but I can never pronounce his name. I really liked the end stanza because of the lyrical quality. It almost had a form with the repetitiveness of to each his own. I thought that was really cool. But I have to say the description of the woodwind also spoke to me. With hollowed bones and stretched dried skin, woodwind percussion symphony begins. It really has that whole, a song of the damned type feel to it. Of those who have gone to Hades or whatever, and the music of the, as it says, that kind of that music of chaos and destruction. So really just a wonderful, intriguing dark rite and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how How about you?
Yeah, I thought this was a well-penned piece by Dan. I enjoyed the musical references in the piece, you know, where he, you know, he placed them in bits and pieces and throughout, and I liked it. I thought, yeah, I thought it was dark and well done. Nice job. Nice job, Dan. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I'm going to hit on, considering this about death itself, doomed mortal, so to speak, and it fits the note of wasted life. But I like the thought of the graveyard with hollow bone and stretched line skin, woodwork percussion symphony again. I like the music of the graveyard, so to speak, the rattling of the bones to make that music, and the conductors and collection to each his own, the idea of someone, always someone in the graveyard, doesn't matter. Maybe they take turns and lead lead those bones into their musical aperitif and welcome the new bodies in. Thank you, Daniel. All right, Jane, we're coming back to you now.
Okay. Yes. I'll put the next piece up. And this is by Orange Sage. And it's called A Hot Smoky Tune. And I'm going to give this one a read. So it's Hot Smoky Tune. He stands like a loud trombone while you manage a few faint trembling tinkles on the canner's feet. His voice on a curl of eyelash flutters in black lace thought across the moon-drenched Venetian. Hello, honey. How about you play me a hot, smoky tune? The people drinks, food-filled room suddenly empties as its satin-smooth walls close in around us, and his open-throated silk shirt, leather-tight pants revealing innuendo, becomes your smoky jazz song memory. End poem.
Great reading, Gene. Thank you very much. And Pam, what you got?
Well, this is awesome. I like the way she created the noir vibe, you know, with really not a huge write. The use of opening up with a trombone I thought was a great choice. Trombones really created atmosphere, or like he stands like a loud trombone is a good metaphor. While you manage a few faint trembling tingles on the piano keys, his voice on a curl of an eyelash flutters in black lace thoughts. I like the way those two lines right there create the idea of the flirtations happening back and forth. And hot smoky tune is a really great phrase because it not only describes the seduction of the music itself, but the atmosphere of the room. If you can imagine, like, people hanging out, smoking their cigarettes and guitars. And, you know, I like also, and his open-throat silk shirt, leather-tight pants, revealing innuendo. And that was a clever use of a clever phrasing there. I think this is a very well-done sensual write.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I thought it was an excellent. I thought it was an excellent piece they penned for the contest. Wonderful imagery throughout, and I thought it was really nice work. His voice on the curl of eyelash flutters in black lace thoughts across the moon-drenched Venetian. That's great imagery in that, and throughout the whole piece, you know, really, just nicely done. Yep.
Absolutely. And I like the that second stanza. That's where the picture is drawn in, as well as the notes of the quote itself. She was the music heard faintly on the edge of sound. And there's that picture of the woman with the moon streaming through in the Venetian blind drawn, and this nice coloration of slats across the body. So that drawn in that mode was a nice touch right there, that second stanza. And then, hello, honey, how about you play me a hot, smoky tune? It's kind of a dreamy quality in that note, if you think of the angle of the background being the music with the piano keys, and then there's that trombone sound, and she's dreaming this in the moment, and all of a sudden, everything just disappears in a flash. Nothing else in the room except for her and this dream, this image of what she sees based on the music and everything that's going on around. So I like to finish in this too, via becomes your smoky jazz song memory, because it's all come off the music itself as she gazes out the window with the moon streaming in. Nicely done.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jean.
Okay. Pam, I have the next one I'm going to put up for you, if you don't mind. There you go.
Mm-hmm. All right. Shears Adrift by Sapphire Rose. Dark porous shears, floating bubbles, pirouette, lovers entwine, bathed in a protective shield, living bubbles congealed in blue, beckoning tightly while adrift in the vast unknown. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, Jean. Should have saved this one for yourself.
I knew it was there. I was being good for a change. But I thought it was a great write by Sapphire. It was a nice brevity. Nice and done. Great metaphor, you know. Just a clever piece. You know, she's down here. It says space science. Clever. I mean, sounds like fun to me, you know. And I think she did a nice job with it. Definitely. The image is really interesting. Definitely. So,
yeah,
way to go, Seth.
Wow. Pam, you got to read it.
Yeah, you know, the I have to agree that with Jean that the image is definitely interesting. I like the way it looks like almost like a close up of splatters of paint. What I like this all the way through because she really makes a strong brevity with only 26 words. But my favorite part is when she says, lovers entwine bathed in a protective shield. Because while the rest of the poem is beautiful, that and Adrift in the Vast Unknown, I feel like adds a sense of humanity to the right, a sense of two people holding on to each other and protecting each other in a world that's like often confusing. And dark. So just a wonderful write and very well done.
Oh, thanks, Pam. The picture reminds me of a colander painting. You know, you turn a colander upside down on top of a canvas that you've already done in nothing but full black or blue, and then you start pouring the paint over the colander bit by bit, and you get these varying globules and colors. And then you tilt the canvas up and down and around to get the swirls to go a bit more. And then use a hair dryer on a cold setting to blow around some of it a bit more to get the variations you want. But this kind of hits me with a sort of a original pouring where everything kind of sits in the moment waiting for your touches, the abstract muse playing with the background. Anyway, there is that note, dark forest, fierce floating bubbles, pirouette, lovers and point. Is that note not just the lovers, but the paint itself, the mix, the draw to each other, and how one exemplifies another. And they are in the moment. They are living bubbles, so to speak. Little touches of relief in against the backdrop that kind of works as that vast unknown. It kind of hits on a note of space as well, and coloration in the moment. All right, Jane, we're coming back your way.
Okie doke. Well, next I'm going to put up a piece by Titus Llewellyn called Monsters as Men, Troubadours. And I have an audio for that. So let me hit that button.
Monsters of men, troubadours. Notably to feelings I've given to any woman, I would politely add some importance to her life, an idle domain of irrelevance tis felt, like an omen, would intrigue be best shown to respect the wife, as though she was thine without cavorting, like this manacle called love, which shows the briefest lust contained in thoughts, moments if all for a kiss, for all intents and purposes, she will find it unjust. Speaking attentively, adding self to the matter, unacquainted with holding an attachment appeal, soothing words often hover, whilst they natter life alike, love the true depth of meaning I feel for what there is missing, they can never abandon the husband, what care can another man, but why not live as often with words if trouble it lands on, the onus giving freely to true happiness you'll sigh. As monsters of men, their jealousies can I assume, dismissible in ways. A woman will go and ponder on words remembered likewise. 'Tis like perfume. Favoured are subtle hints of words to bond her to the husband who is so unable. He will illustrate what intriguing words she'll have, then swoon him, making love. The determined effort so immaculate. Defender of the given words from merely a whim, given the immense pleasure received aids entirety, a sensitive woman who seeks to aid some sobriety of leisure. Those relaxing words are worth a tone, deeply moving parts indeed. 'Tis home from home.
Great read, Titus. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It's very much appreciated. And Pam, why don't we start?
Yeah, that was absolutely a beautiful SoundCloud. I have to say, you know, Titus always has such a masterful command of language, very elegant. I like how this tells the story of a man who struggles with his affections and his sensual feelings towards a woman. And the jealousies that he feels. This is actually, I think, the second poem this week that used the word onus. I like that word, you know, I looked it up both times because I've forgotten by this time. But, the meaning of, you know, one's duties or one's responsibility. The onus giving freely to true happiness, she'll sigh as monsters of men, their jealousies, can I assume, disassemble a way a woman will go and ponder. It's interesting, too, that there's this, I think within those lines, the whole idea of how, in such time periods, throughout history, when two people, well, man and a woman were caught being lovers, it was oftentimes the woman whose finger was pointed at more and who, you know, had to wear the scarlet letter. And I also really liked speaking attentively, adding salve to the matter. It's like trying to talk about something so that it doesn't fester from inside and because you've held it in. There's a lot of wonderful lines in this, but it's beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I think this was well written, and I think it was a great tale expressed by Titus. There's lots of good lines all the way throughout, but I did go to the speaking attentively, adding salve to the matter, unacquainted with holding an attachment appeal. Choosing words often hover. I grabbed the rest of that stanza. I thought they were just very good lines, but they all were. So well done, Titus, as always. Much enjoyed. Great audio, too. Thank you.
Absolutely. I like that background. It kind of harkens back to a couple of hundred years ago when women were, even as wives, they were treated as being owned. And they were literally, because they couldn't own anything themselves, but they were owned in essence. And there's an idea in here of, instead of treating them like that, you hit on the sort of honoring those wives instead of just the ones who give you the brood that moves the family name forward to actually and embrace them with the same noted passion you feel in the first place, rather than actually walking that passion outside the marriage house, because it's on the source monsters of men. I guess the superior angle, why spend your lust and love elsewhere when you've got wife at home that you can actually sing upon that note? And that's why the monsters are coming back to you always.
Okie dokie. Well, my next one I'm going to put out also has an audio, and this is a piece by Diane Z. It's called Just Another Beautiful Woman. So let me get that one going. It is right there.
Just Another Beautiful Woman by Diane D. On her knotty hands are scarlet scars, scorched red into her palms like Jesus. Welts well underneath nimble knuckles, avowedly dangling is rubber band skin. Eyes smiling at her dancing crow feet that fade ivory in the absence of light. White streaks marble once black hair, thinning, sticking out like face fuzz. Her smile like that of Mother Teresa, where her eyes curled up like her lips. Wearing an old turquoise velvet blouse, necklace adorned in dimes and nickels. Standing there as if beneath the arch, an earthly scent of sage, spritzing fine mist around her as she walked on air. For she is just another beautiful woman. End poem.
Thank you, Diane. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. This is very much appreciated. All right, Jean, why don't we start with you? Maybe. You unmute.
Yes. I done did it again. Jeez Louise, I don't want to make noise while the audio is playing. And, you know, of course, I have noise in the background all the time. But so I put myself on mute and then I forget. See, silly me. But I thought this was a great piece by Diane. I loved all the imagery throughout, and I love her descriptions of this woman. You know, eyes smiling and her dancing crow feet, it fade ivory in the absence of light. White streaks marble once black hair, thinning. Sticking out like Facebook. Just lovely, I don't know, just a lovely tribute to that beautiful woman, you know, who's aged well, you know, or, you know, just gracefully. So nice work, Diane, and thanks for sharing that one with us very much.
Nicely noted, Jean. Thank you. Gracefully is the word right there. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, this one is absolutely beautiful. I like it how it pays tribute to a single woman, but it also pays tribute to many women, you know, what type of women who live life to the fullest, who care for people and, you know, don't get overly obsessed with the idea of being physically beautiful, but rather living a life that is beautiful. And, you know, I like how it mentions the earthy scent of sage spritzing fine mist around her as she walked on air. That is just so ethereal and spiritual. I also really might like the mention of the crow's feet that fade ivory in the absence of light. You know, that idea that we all look the same in the dark. And there's so many wonderful descriptions, and her smile like that of Mother Teresa, where her eyes curled up like her lips. There's nothing better than when somebody smiles and it's a smile that radiates from the eyes. And I think that to me this was about a woman who really made herself beautiful because she gave so much to other people. And so a wonderful write and very well done.
Wow, thank you. I think this might be a twofold piece. That note that Jean hit on with graceful, and that is, there is beauty in aging gracefully, and that is owning everything that comes with the age, unlike today where it seems that, hey, I'm 75 and I want to look 45. So it's Botox and facelifts and everything else until you end up looking like plastic, almost like something that should be standing in Madame Tussauds wax museum. So the idea in this is actually owning those bits of life that you've worked hard in nurturing and enduring, like the dancing crow feet, that faded ivory in the absence of light, white streaks, marble once black hair thinning. And I like that sort of sticking out like face flowers, those little tufts that the grandkids give notice to. Right, what's this? Oh, I don't know. Just a little age setting in. And the I even like the thought with dropping in that necklace adorned in dimes and nickels kind of hits on an older age of saving and when life was harder. And, you know, age doesn't have to be just the ugliness you see in the mirror or the one that you view because, hey, they're no longer young again. Age means life lived, which some do not live life. So enjoy it. All right, Jean. We're back on you.
Well, I'm so glad to be here then. Rex, I'm going to put the next one up for you. This is a piece by Thomas B., and it's called Return of the Warrior. Whenever you're ready.
Return of the Warrior by Thomas B. We gave up our homes to plows and cattle, pesticides and steroids, train tracks to sunsets, guns and smoke, signed treaties and lies, all to put a stop to babies' cries. Brave boys die. No counting coup, only death would do. Disease and our horrors scoured like the wind. We knew the path we were given. No one could win. Rattlesnakes cast a straighter path. The death was upon us. The shadows were cast. The wolf was dying, buffalo gone. Prairie divided, tied to a farm where once forever could be harvested. Winds tied to souls, now only lived liquor, a dollar. With nowhere to go. Bravery squandered to billets and cannons. Death stalks those who cannot hold onto their nation. Oceans are rising. Dead seas may return. When you think you know everything, you forget how much there is to be learned. Technology crumbling. Old paths rising. Wolf howls as full moon shift tides. Nations never die, only cease to write their own history. The dance beats on the earth. The earth never stops listening. And new ways open to the patient walkers of prairie grasses. New oceans speak the old language, never forgotten, only waiting for the spirit, the nature of man, the path of the warrior, all to come home. Fences fall, plows fail, animals seek those that understand and love them. A new world awakens when we cease our arrogance, accept to rule, only to serve, and pump.
Yeah.
All right,
nice read, Rex.
Yeah, great read there, Rex. And this is such a wonderful write by Thomas B. I really like how the main message, to me anyways, is the idea of the how we are, humanity is selfish and greedy and arrogant, and we're too focused on ourselves, too focused on making sure we have the next big thing, the next fast thing. And we don't take time. There's no longer the idea of listening to the voice of Mother Nature. This is wonderful all the way through, but I did particularly like that second stanza, rattlesnakes cast a straighter path, the death was upon us, the shadows were cast, the wolf was dying, and buffalo gone, prey divided, tied to a farm, where once forever could be harvested, winds tend to souls. Now only lived liquor. You know, it just really it's a heartbreaking rite on the whole idea of a society that once was crumbling apart. A powerful rite and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
Well, I thought it was a great take on the prompts, and I thought his thoughts were well conveyed throughout. I grabbed this stanza here. Rattlesnakes cast a straighter path. The death was upon us. The shadows were cast. The wolf was dying, the buffalo gone, prairie divided and tied to a farm where once forever could be harvested. Winds tied to souls, now only lived liquor the dollar. I don't know. Sorry, my eyeballs went cross-eyed. I thought that was a great stanza. I mean, but they were all good. They all made a point, and they were all a little different than one another in what they had to say. But the overall tale was well done. And thanks for writing for the contest, Donna. Much enjoyed.
Well, absolutely. I like that thought right in the middle of that first stanza. No counting coup, only death would do. It kind of hits back on it. Counting coup was a mark of prestige when you can go in and touch, hit an enemy with a coup stick and get back out again without yourself being harmed or actually harming the enemy in the moment. It's a mark of understanding in the moment and adding a bit of confusion and fear into the enemy's gait. So maybe the war could be stopped before it even begins. That was nice. I like that thought in there. And even the one that you hit upon, rattlesnakes cast a straighter path. That's kind of a double twisted thought because you know how rattlesnakes move. They don't go in a straight path. So the idea of them casting a straighter path than the treaties and everything else that came along with the white man crossing the country says a whole lot in and of itself. Now the back end of this is hits on that notion of losing one's way when we're supposed to be the caretakers of the planet and live within the richness of that which is offered instead of taking that which one cherishes more than the planet itself. Nicely done, Tom. Thank you. All right, Jane.
I got back
on you.
I got back before you were ready for me. I'm so proud of myself. I want to welcome Kay Hartless to the show. Hey, Kay, how are you tonight?
I'm okay. I have a glass of wine. My children are sleeping. Oh. It's kind of nice.
that sounds like a win-win. Win-win. Now, Kay, I'm not sure. I know you said that you didn't know if I had your sound set, but I don't have a piece on the board for you tonight. I mean, you're welcome to pull one. I have no problem with that.
Oh, my gosh. I thought you guys were doing a show that I'm not up on your schedule. Sorry.
Right.
I thought you guys were doing this show. I thought maybe you were doing a show that I had written for, so.
I know I saw one from you a night or so ago, but I'm not sure. My week's been a blur, so you have to just forgive me. But you're welcome to put
here.
One on the board for tonight. Yeah.
I don't know what your topic is. I'm sorry.
We have open poetry on Fridays.
Oh, okay.
It's always open poetry. So if you want to put one up, come to do so.
Okay. Would I just add that to the group?
The topic board for Fill My Eyes with Poetry on 6/3.
Okay.
You're in Light Poets, correct?
Yeah, I'm on All Poetry Sound,
okay.
But I don't have, I only have like a fraction of my stuff on there, so.
I gotcha. Well, you're welcome to send it to me. If you're not in Late Night Poets, which I'm not exactly sure right now, you're welcome to send it to me in a private message. and I'll get it together and put it up. Okay?
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay, and let me see now what. Pam, I have the next one for you to read, if you don't mind.
All right.
And here we go.
Feathered Fair by Li Wei, and it goes like this. Once I woke midnight to tangled hair and matted elf locks and knew Queen Mab had visited me with a curse of misfortune. Should I wash clean her work, my room a cell block? Suddenly, with wounded pride, seeking out a nurse. I could not cut my hair for risk of angering the face. I could not leave it there, for life was waiting, clutching, squeezing, and would soon be screaming in the light of day. I stepped out of bed, out of house, the darkness freezing. Stars in their orbits shone pale, and I crept below over wet, grasping grass and bare feet, shuddering a traipse towards the tree line, that distant skylight, glittering a soft glow of pity or watchfulness down on my shadowed shape, ignoring scrapes and ankled landings, seeking, yearning, desperate in the dark between the scraggled branches and spinning webs, searching until I spied an owl returning with a single powerful swoop of swift wings and a last chance. I climbed, careful but quick, towards the nest, thoughts racing rapid as the river burbling somewhere close in the black darkness, the bark rough against my skin, my mischief-matted hair oiling down my neck, my spine, my revulsion harnessed. I rose even quicker to grab the nesting owl. Would be foolish to grab the chicks a crime, but the nest that I could steal. Suddenly, a wriggling rodent squeaked as the babies consumed it. Wary of sharp claws and the glistening blade of a beak, I healed, clinging to the tree, silent as a grave, until at last the parent left. Gently, gently, soft as the star shines, I lifted huddled chicks one by one into the tree hollow until they were none blessed. An absurdly grateful nun had chirped, held fast by shaking fingertips, the feathered nest placed upon my crown, upside down, and I endured the animal warmth of feathers fluttering and poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Jean, why don't you start us off? Jean?
Man.
No?
Oh, yeah. Whatever. Damn, I don't know why I did it that time. But, well, I was saying that I really thought that this was just packed full of imagery. And what an intriguing take on that prompt, because I look at the prompt and I see something just a little darker, I think, than what I was getting from the read. But in the same respect, that write actually lightened up the picture for me in a way. I thought it was intriguing how that happened. Just a different set of thoughts on that. And there's a lot of great stanzas throughout, so I'm not sure which one I would want to grab and say, yes, 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 because they were all good. So wonderful work, Leah Way, and I want to thank you for writing for the contest, and what a great great piece. Enjoyed it very much.
Thanks, Jean. And Kay, how about you?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
No, but yeah. Do it anyway.
Okay. All right. Well, thank goodness. Thank goodness Rex can't hear me as I make this wonderful comment. All right. So here we go. But I like how this had an ancient Celtic feeling. I like that you brought in Queen Mab. You know, and to me, you know, at first I had, it did feel kind of dark to me. It felt like somebody who was, you know, trapped in a dream world, almost as if they were in a mental hospital, like an older one. And then it kind of drifts. Like, I feel like maybe it was a dream, but I like how, like, after the first about three stanzas, it shifts, three stanzas approximately. It shifts into the scene of her, of the character climbing a tree and facing the obstacles. It felt like how in a lot of ancient cultures, when you wore, like, you know, feathers, or you know, that you would have to go, like, on a hunting trip or a gathering trip. It felt like the kind of, like, she was sent out on a mission that in order to have the honor of wearing the feathers, she had to be willing to climb the tree, willing to outwit the mother owl and the father owl. Just really strong use of imagery throughout. And, you know, it really just, to me, it has like a dreamlike quality, and yet you feel like you can't quite decide, because while it's almost dreamlike, there's also that whole idea that you've been pulled into a reality of someone, you know, who has a mission to get done. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. Quest, yes.
What?
But I'm
I thought you couldn't move.
Well, what? Did I miss something? Well, those first two stanzas hit on the what's actually going on. You hit on, you got Queen Mab, you got Tangled Hair, Matted Elf Locks, and Misfortune Should I Wash, Clean Her Work. And then I Could Not Cut My Hair for Risk of Angering the Fae. I Could Not Leave It There because life is out there and I have to do something with my hair and present myself in a better form in the meantime. So the idea of trying to undo what the elves or the fae and the Mab had done to her is in and of itself another part of the curse, maybe exacerbated. So everything else from the third stanza down, there is that notation of the quest to do something with her hair in the moment. So the idea, she comes down, hits on that notion, the fifth, fourth stanza, I think it is, returning with a single powerful swoop of wings, a last chance. Then the thorn climbed towards the nest representing at least something tangible, real, and made whole in the moment that she could use as a covering for the what had been done to her hair that she couldn't do anything with. So the idea of the quest, that note of that which still clings on the inside of the nest, but the warmth comes from knowledge, from the as a little bit of protection because they line the nest for the owlets, but it's also something that she can use for her wet and a way of harnessing that damage that was was done with the curse itself. All right, Jean.
Okay.
We're coming back to you.
Okay, you know, quest was exactly the word I was looking for. Sorry, I just had to say that. That was, I kept saying mission, but as soon as Rex said quest, I thought, that was the word I was looking for.
I hear you. Okay, and just for the record, Rex, K Heartless is dropped, so I don't know if she'll be calling back. But just wanted to give you that heads up. Okay, and the next one I'm going to put up is the part six of Never Sleep Again, Sleeping Beauty audio drama by We Are All Gone. So here we go. And there's the button.
Oh,
Automatically, the doors parted way and she stepped onto the floor inside. In Sleepy's mind, she imagined something different. She was perplexed by what she would find. No rending bodies gorged upon. No trace of macabre pawns who failed the murderous marathon. Her hypothesis drawn, but the conclusion foregone as she pondered how something was wrong. As Sleepy tapped her feet, clicking sounds of scuffling cleats, she crossed the chalky tiles that surrounded her as she waited by a counter.
hello?
Hi, I'm Todd. Welcome to White Castle. What can I get you?
Is this the mythical White Castle in the sky?
Mm-hmm.
And you're the infamous giant who slays all that come?
It's been so long, I don't even recognize that guy anymore. When that little dude, what's his name?
You mean Jack?
Bingo. When Jack stole the golden goose, I was so furious. And I thought to myself, I had it all that time, you know, all that wealth, and what good did I do with it?
Todd, for the last time, I told you, you're supposed to take your break, scheduled break, 10 minutes ago. Do you know what happens when you take your scheduled break late, Todd? Lisa's break has to be pushed back. Then Julio's break needs to be pushed back. Then Brenda doesn't take her lunch until after the summer rush. Do you know what happens then, Todd? Anarchy, Todd. Anarchy is what happens. This is White Castle. We have a standard. We do not tolerate anarchy at White Castle.
Sorry, Mr. Papanopoulos, it won't happen again. You know, he comes across like a real ball breaker, but he's actually a pretty good dude.
I literally have all the questions.
The giant stood back, and Sleepy heard what had occurred when the giant slept and in Jack crept to steal the valuable bird. He recalled his fateful fall after Jack hastily crawled back down the bean plant to his house he ran before the giant slipped on rainfall. After his injury and his dealings with insurance, the giant was expecting a hefty reimbursement. Unfortunately for the giant, you see, he legitimately forgot to disclose an important fact to those who needed to know. No golden egg taxes were included in his faxes to his humble human accountant, nor added to taxable income. Seems the giant fell prey to a bigger beast that day. The nefarious IRS did what the government does best when money owed is in play. After the loss and the crash of his stocks, the giant filed for bankruptcy, licensing his White Castle to the business White Castle, and applied for work anxiously.
Yeah, after federal tax and stipa, I barely make enough to cover the property tax, but I kind of like who I am right now, and I'm afraid of who I'd become if I had that wealth again.
No pity for me seemed to be what he pleaded, as if the comfort of less was exactly what he'd needed. Sleepy saw on his face a sense of peace that had replaced the pacing desire for power and greed. He had found some grace in defeat. For a moment, Sleepy felt jealous. Maybe her overzealous desire to set fire and leave breathless those who had left her restless. Perhaps better sleep was she.
So how do I get down from here?
Employee shuttle. One way up, one way down.
Where did customers even come from?
Oh, we only ever get one.
The giant stretched his finger, pointing towards the terrace. There sat the handsome Neil Patrick Harris. The time passed and the employees closed shop. Sleepy stood in front of the structure at the twice daily bus stop.
So do you live in the restaurant?
No, I live in the back with my manager, Todd, and the other workers actually sublet the room, so I just sleep on my rug. It's all I got left, but, you know, I love my rug.
So who the hell is the bus for?
Who else? Him.
Neil Patrick Harris, the fairest and rarest of effervescence, ignored the duo's presence. As if called by the sky, he tiptoed a line and headed deep into the clouds, where mysteries would be found.
Mr. Patrick Harris, where are you going?
Wherever God takes me.
Alrighty then. Well, it's nice meeting you. Farewell and good luck.
Sleepy stepped on the vehicle, waiting for the wheels to start turning and get back to the burning revenge and vengeance so alluring.
Hi, I'm Matt. Please keep your hands to yourself, keep them in the vehicle at all times, and no flash photography.
Sleepy sat sheepishly retracing the encounter with the oddly friendly giant behind the vinyl covered counter.
How do you follow the bus route on an invisible road?
I know what you're thinking. Weird. Bussing this guy, but I assure you, with the spells we put on this mama, nothing short of a bell rug could hurt us. Yep, this is actually an old convert we repurposed from what used to be a local high school, Sky High. Great school, but hard to drop out of. Yeah, this is a simple route, a peaceful route. No traffic, No pedestrians, no surprises.
As the bus turned, an unnerved Neil Patrick Harris, clearly the fairest, walked in front of the path of the bus unperturbed. The bus ran amok and swerved, finding no ounce of luck as it reached the road's edge and took flight like a duck.
Next up.
Great read, Gonzo. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam, what do you got?
Well, I did enjoy this. It was fun. As always, it was a great SoundCloud, very entertaining. I really like that he brought Neil Patrick Harris into it, Neil Patrick Harris, the fairest of them all. That was just, you know, to bring a modern day, you know, kind of pop culture figure into the right, I thought added a clever and fun dimension to it. And I like how the giant overcomes his, you know, need for power and discovers, you know, that he's happy, you know, working the everyday job of the, you know, the job of the everyday man. And the references to taxes, like no golden egg taxes, were included in his faxes to his humble human account, nor added to taxable income. You know, the to me that he could that Gonzo could create humor around the idea of taxes, I thought was just spot on. You know, this is what I like about it, is he takes these characters that are you know, fantasy, and he brings them into a very modern setting, and the juxtaposition of that really makes for a great entertainment. So excellent writing, very well done.
All right, thank you, Pam. All right, Jane, how about you?
I have to say that this was, it was an awesome piece. It was fun and entertaining. Great imagery and such a wonderful imagination he has throughout all these pieces that he shared with us. I sit here and I say, where could he ever come up with that? But, you know, that's the beauty of all, each of us. We all have our own imaginations. And this one's just clever. Comes in from left field and it goes right back out into left field. So, you know, it was fun. It was fun and enjoyable. So thank you, Gonzo. And, you know, look forward to the next one.
Oh, it is, because I still remember the first one. And I'm still wondering about Red in that forest and the wolf, because there were some illusions in that one. Everything's kind of walking into then Sleepy gets in, and then you got Jack, and you got everybody seems to be getting in on the action, which kind of makes for a convoluted tale and has you, all right, where the hell is he taking us with all this? And I like the back end of this where the swerve of the bus, and all of a sudden you hear everybody on the bus screaming as they go over, I guess, what amounts to a cliff at that moment, take flight like a duck. So, is there a crash and burn coming up? Or does that bus grow wings and actually take flight? Not to mention everything else that walks within this, the thought of Neil Patrick Harris and the very nature of the fair and effervescence for him. Kind of has a nice oddball grin to that thought. And the idea of the giant itself not worrying about the goose who's gone, because everything else has been gone as well, because, hey, I never paid my taxes anyway, so I'm better off with nothing at this point in time than sharing my large house, because I love my rug. Twisted. And definitely, all right, I can't wait to find out what else he's got planning and how he taps the whole 9 yards that he's thrown in here all together to finish out the storyline. Like I said, there's a movie in here somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere. Absolutely. Okay. Well, I think Rex is going to toss it back to me, so I'm already ready.
Yes, coming your way.
Up by, this is going to be Sweet Amy by Weaver of Dreams. And I have an audio for this. So here we go.
You are gone. Of course my mind knows you are. Yet each time I walk into the home we built together, I feel you gently pat my cheek as you always did, and smell your very essence, which will stay forever. The mundane aspects of life seem pointless to me now. Why must I stay here when you are there without me? Then I hear you say, as you try to lift me from despair, my darling boy, you have to think of our sweet Amy. I glance into the stroller, see your beaming smile again. Soft buttercup-colored hair, blue eyes round with wonder. She puts her arms out to be lifted, her trust in me complete. A tiny part of my broken heart mends, simply because of her.
Great read, Weaver. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Jean, we're starting with you this round. No harm, Aiden.
I thought that this was beautifully penned. You know, I see in the author's notes, it was written from the point of view of a husband and father who has tragically lost his wife. And, you know, I think that Weaver actually pulled that off very well. Because that baby, that sweet Amy, is a reason to carry on. And it's the hope and the desire to carry on. You know, things are hard when you lose a spouse or a loved one. And, you know, sometimes it takes a lot to really keep going. But a child will definitely give you incentive and a reason to do that. So I thought it was well done. Beautifully written, Weaver. Great imagery and emotions throughout. So nice job.
Thank you, Jean. All right, Pam, mm-hmm. How about you?
Yeah, this is absolutely beautiful. It's heartfelt. Weaver has a real gift for writing from other people's points of views. And I have to, you know, agree with Jean that, you know, in such a difficult situation, oftentimes knowing that you have someone else to take care of, such as a young child, can really be a part of the healing process. It's such a sad rite, but at the same time, it reminds us that there is hope. You know, I really like the end where she puts her name out to be lifted, her trust in me complete, a tiny part of my broken heart mend, simply because of her. The idea of having, you know, a daughter, a young daughter who trusts you so much and is in your care, just, it's beautiful and it's heartfelt and it's very well done.
Thank you, you too. I like that picture. Baby looks like it's kind of wrapped up in a cocoon and then carefully laid into a very, very soft spider web as bedding. It's a nice touch, that picture itself. The language fits the picture and the loss that rolls within it. By the second stanza, that last line did confuse me a bit until I hit on the thought, oh, it's one way and she is gone. So the revelation there kind of struck a different thought. And it does, that last stanza walks on the note of she might be gotten, but the sweet Amy is that almost reincarnation at that point, and hence that picture looks so much like a cocoon. And so the idea is that, hey, you can't have her, but you still have a part of her that resonates fully with her in the moment. Nicely tapped into there, Kate. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, we're back on you. Dog pile on the rabbit.
Wednesday. Okay. Rex, I'm going to put the next one up for you. It's a piece by Alex Ader, and it's called Earth.
Alright. Earth by Elixator. Force of the damned, come to bring you home after the end of your destructive stay, treating the earth like it was yours to ruin as you please, shaping yourself into the landlord of a property no mere mortal could hope to possess. But after all of us are dead and gone, taken within the wild hunt on a night horse's wings, nature will recover as it has from all parasites consuming her before, creating something new from the dust of our civilization, shaping our bones into a planet we no longer recognize. We were never something new, another volcanic extension lasting a mayfly's lifetime to an entity as old as the stars. What hubris it is thinking that we were eternity, destroying our future in the process. End poems. All right, Pam.
Wonderful read there, Rex. Yeah, I really just, wow, a powerful write that has like an end times type feel to it. Horse of the Dam reminds me of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. And I really like that after all of us are dead and gone, taken within the wild hunt on a night horse's wings, nature will recover as it has from all parasites consuming her before. It's almost like that George Carlton Joker quote that says, and I'm slightly paraphrasing, something along the lines of, you know, don't worry about Earth, worry about yourself. You know, Earth will be fine. Earth will take care of yourself, or herself. You know, she's a tough cookie. I don't think he's a tough cookie, but, you know, you get what I mean. Shaping our bones into a planet we no longer recognize. We were never something new, another volcanic extinction lasting a mayfly's lifetime. Like, to me, there's a real kind of philosophical element in those lines and the idea that we're not as important as we think we are. Other lives have come and gone before ours and will come and go after ours. So there's a kind of foolishness in how think we are more important than we are. So excellent write and very well done.
Wow, thank you, Payam. And
wow,
yeah. How about you?
I thought it was a great write, strong and well expressed, and I thought the points were well made throughout. Just really nicely put together. You know, I mean, I was going to grab a stanza, but I'm like, okay, now which one do I want? Because you know, horses of the damned come to bring you home after the end of your destructive stay. What a great entrance into this piece. Definitely captures your attention and makes you want to keep on reading. You know, and then what hubris it is, thinking that we were eternity, destroying our future in the process. And what a wonderful ending to this piece. So, you know, I mean, I just thought it was all well done and well worded. And, well, you know, nicely put out there to all of us. Great job.
Well, thank you, too. This reminds me of Godzilla. Aha. Not the animal. The song. there's a portion, a refrain in the song that goes, history shows again and again how nature points out the folly of men and then throws in Godzilla as the back end, that note to nature always pops something. Volcanoes, hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, tsunamis. There is always something nature throws out when it's needed most. I mean, the Black Plague was around that killed off 75% of the inhabitants of Earth at one point in time. And then you had Spanish flu in 1918, which killed off some, say, as much as 100 million people, which like 25% of the world's population. So there is a note to that we can do our worst and nature always bites back harder.
Mm-hmm.
Nicely done, Alex. Thank you very much. And it's coming your way, Gene. Godzilla.
Is that good? It's kind of low, though. He's kind of louder than that. and I can't get that squeal in it. Pam, I have the next one for you. This is by Namdad Somo. A warrior's call.
All right. A warrior's call by Namdad Somo. And it goes like this. Seeking solace in my sacred space, which I have embraced as my own, gazing up into those curious lurking eyes, making my soul wish to draw its blinds and retreat back inside. My heart needs the sun so I can fly, forced into darkness, long black nights, once again, long black nights, once again, once again. As a warrior, I must stand tall, rejecting fear and hiding my light. Fists raise up, rebel yell for one to evolve, means embracing hell, head held high, acceptance of all. Staff pointed towards the heavens, galaxy to galaxy, unable to fall, echoes across the universe, response perhaps to a warrior's call. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Jean, we're coming to you.
How did I know that? How did I know?
Oh, I got to throw you a bone now and then to make you start first.
Oh, my gosh. This was a fabulous piece. Pam has a wonderful way with her Native American rights. And I don't mean Native American rights, but with that feeling in the background of it, more so than even what she writes sometimes. She puts it out there, and you get right on the boat with her as to where she's heading. And I think that this is just, you know, no exception to it, just really well done. I love the entrance into this piece was wonderful. And I think that, you know, it really says a lot in that first stanza. You know, seeking solace in my sacred space, which I have embraced as my own, gazing up into those curious lurking eyes, making my soul wish to draw its blinds and retreat back inside. My heart needs the sun so I can fly, forced into darkness, long black nights once again, long black nights once again, once again. That is just a fabulous, fabulous beginning in here. And I think that she really just did a fabulous job with this all the way around. So wonderful job, Pam, and thank you so much. Great stuff.
Thank you, Jean. All right, Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I really like this one. It flows beautifully. It has a wonderful rhythm to it. Like you could almost, like, the picture with the wolf, well, I don't know what's that. But that picture with the drum, you can almost feel as if this poem was written to the rhythm of that drum. I like how the main message is the whole idea that a warrior's calling isn't just physical, but it's mental, it's spiritual. It's the idea of evolving into a stronger person, into a higher power. I really like the whole idea of the inner reflection of this. And as a warrior, I must stand tall, rejecting fear and hiding my light. This raise up, rebel yell for one to evolve means embracing hell. It's really through those most difficult times that we grow as a person, that we grow as a warrior. So excellent write and very well done.
Great comments, you think? Can't help thinking about that title. The capitalization of the S got to be a thought to a little deeper meaning in that angle. Anyway, I too like the opening, seeking solace in my sacred space. Not just the alliteration, but the necessity and almost reverting back to a natural order of how things once were. And gazing up into those curious lurking eyes kind of hints on that notion of the spirit animal, making my soul wish to draw its blinds and retreat back inside. Again, that sort of maybe hiding from the darkness, but and then embracing it because it is necessary at the moment. Rejecting fear and hiding my light, needing to stand tall, and the thought through a fist raise and rebel yell. There's that notion, embracing the very nature of oneself in the moment because of that which must need be done. The staff pointed towards the heavens brings as above, so below. Is that necessity? We all look at that skies and we have that need of bringing that bit of joy back to the ground level. And it echoes across the universe, tales to be told and remembered, response perhaps the warrior's call. Again, yes, there is a need at times where the warrior must stand tall so that some things might be salvaged, saved. Nicely done. Namdog is Somo. Okay? I don't remember that name. I don't think I've seen it before.
It was Pam 8.
Oh. Oh, okay.
Yeah, she swapped it over a little while back.
Now I remember. All right.
See that? Every now and then I remember things. Just can't count it all the time. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Well, for my next magic trick, see, y'all talking about burritos.
Pull a rabbit
and my next. Yeah, I'm still going to pull a rabbit. I'm going to put up a piece by Mr. M called Forgotten. So let me hit that button and get that party started.
This is my recital of Forgotten, a poem inspired by Sylvia Plath. My tongue is silver and intricate. My mind is littered with assumptions. As I observe, I take time and soak it all in. I am a cruel but beautiful lie, unbound by the box of faith. Its four corners are fleeting. I found no epiphany or clarity there. Now, in the darkness, littered with stars, I stare into the nothingness that is my heart. No glimmers or flickers, devoid of all light, separating me from the lies. Now, I am as a secluded, frozen stream, never to indulge in the radiating light and warming smiles. I let loose a scream, and am only greeted by the echoes of the moon. I rub my hands together to fight off the numbing chill, but to no avail. I am unimportant and come and go like the common cold. Every night seems to grow darker. In me, feelings long abandoned have been resurrected. This old soul has died many deaths, but to be forgotten, it is the worst fate of all.
Great read, Robert. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam, what you got?
I thought this was a powerful and emotive dark rite. I remember like about 4 or 5 years ago when Robert did a show on mirror poems where you had to choose a poem and write a mirror of it, like basically write the opposite of what you thought the poem was saying or the emotion gotten from the poem. And I thought this was a great mirror poem to Sylvia Plath, The Mirror. It's got wonderful, hard-hitting, dark lines. I think the ending wraps up nicely with the, but to be forgotten is the worst fate of all. But I found no epiphany or clarity there. Now in the darkness littered with stars, I stare into the nothingness that is my heart. No glimmers or flickers, devoid of all light, separating me from the lies. It's like the idea that to me that the lies that you tell yourself over and over again, or the lies other people tell you over and over again, eventually cause you to close yourself off and to reverse back into a state of, you know, darkness and of loneliness. So, Yeah, and I have to agree with that ending. You know, that I think for many people, the hope you have is that there will be something somebody will remember you by. And to be completely forgotten is almost like, in its own way, a type of hell. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Oh, thank you very much, Ben. And how about you?
I think this was just a wonderful write. The last three lines of it were so strong, and I thought they held a lot of truth. You know, there is nothing worse than to think of being forgotten. You know, I mean, just really. This old soul has died many deaths, but to be forgotten, it is the worst fate of all. I believe so. The other stanzas are wonderful and well written, and I think Robert did an excellent job with it. I would end up pulling lines instead and have to break it up, and I don't really want to do that because I think they really belong together because it's a complete thought in each one of those stanzas. So excellent job, Robert, and thank you so much for putting it on the board for tonight. It was good to see this piece again. Thank you.
God, I remember this from 4 odd years ago, and I didn't catch that this old soul has died many deaths, but to be forgotten is the worst face of all. Died many deaths. That reminds me of, what was it, the quote, the coward dies many deaths, but a hero dies but once. And that is kind of what this is, that sort of almost cowardice in the moment, especially with the offering of my tongue is silver. And then finish out that fourth line, I am a cruel but beautiful lie. And it's kind of a notion of what we tell ourselves. And unbound by the box of faith, there's a notation, whether that's faith in oneself or faith in things, or maybe even faith to the point of spirituality. It's four corners of fleeting. So I could reference all of those notions, oneself, things, and the spiritual angle. There's no epiphany or clarity. Darkness littered with stars, the nothingness that is my heart. Now that hits on the note of cold, even death at that point. No glimmers or flickers, devoid of all light, separating me again from the lies. So, secluded frozen stream. This is almost a notation to being boxed right there, no light, the scream. It's kind of a ghostly and ethereal in the moment. And even though you rub your hands together, there is nothing there but cold because you've already passed on. And the idea of with the cowardice on the many deaths, but to be forgotten is the worst fate of all, is that idea that maybe if I hadn't lied to myself all these years, had a little bit of faith in something other than what I told myself, then the death would have been that which one could be go with ease at, knowing that in that death there would be some sort of remembrance past the note of being totally forgotten. Always be done, Robert. Thank you very much. All right, Jane, we're back to you.
Okey-dokey. Well, I don't know. I have a choice to make here. It's 22 minutes after 11, and I have a few poems left. So I'm going to start.
Flying Greek and Brothers?
What did you say about me reading one? Oh, the Flying Greek. No, that's on the board out there. They're all talking about the burritos, and I'll be talking Tex-Mex before it's over. Tell you what, Rex, I'm going to put the next one up for you to read.
All right.
Snow Blossoms.
I can do that.
By Jack.
Yes.
You're wonderful.
Snow Blossoms by Jack Blue. On the blank, deserted hill, a tree alone was standing still, with her branches hanging down, sullenly, as if to frown on evil goblins' jamboree, splashing loud in symphony. Then a crazy blizzard came, blew them off and won the game. Snow fell endlessly on her, rolling down the calendar. All the earth was simply white, and she faded out of sight. Spring resounded silently, spreading out a fresh green sea. She was still with heavy snow on her branches hanging low. Sunlight made it bright and sweet, like a bloom about to beat. Her blossoms mirrored roses' band, rocking round her silver hand. Moonlight took them to the dream, where no flower dared to beam. Reportedly, their song would sail, soon to bless a starry tale. And Paul. All right, Jean, we're coming to you. All right.
Well, I thought it was a lovely piece and a great imagery throughout. I thought the rhyme and meter was on target all the way through. And it was really a delight to listen to. And it's a great read, Rex. Really nicely done. I enjoyed
it. Well,
I
had
piece.
A nice, easy flow to it.
What's that? I
had a nice, easy flow to it.
Yeah.
It kind of drips and hums like the heavy branches laden with the snow.
Yeah, it was nicely put together and very enjoyable. I'm learning to like more and more of Jack's pieces as time goes by. You know, as I read more and more of them, they're all just really nicely written. So it's nice work. So thanks, Jack.
And Pam.
Yeah, this has wonderful rhyme and flow to it. I like the six-line stanzas. You know, beautiful imagery. I really enjoy the personification of the trees or of the tree itself as a lone figure. And the evil goblin coming along with a nice touch, sullenly as if to frown on evil goblin's jamboree, splashing loud in symphony. You know, and then, like, I like that he brings us into winter where this tree, this representation of almost like a spring-type goddess, it is covered in snow and faded out of sight. And then the healing comes along, the blossoming. And then, you know, there's such a wonderful sense of renewal. So beautifully written and very well done.
I'm going to go with, since the title was Snow Blossoms, I'm going to hit on the thought of the seasons of a cherry blossom tree. On a blank deserted hill, the tree alone was standing still, with her branches hanging down, suddenly as if to frown, and splashing out in symphony. Then the blizzard came. The thought of going through the season, from the fact that it's a fall, now the blossoms and everything else, the leaves have gone. Snow has come, which fades out the tree, gives it a bit of stark contrast to the white snow, which hints at all the earth was simply white as she faded out of sight. Kind of hints a nice snowstorm right there. Then the spring resounded silently, spreading out a fresh green sea, the leaves blooming. She was still with heavy snow on a branch hanging low. Sunlight made it bright and sweet, like a bloom about to be. And then the last stanza, her blossoms mirrored roses band, rocking round her silver hand. So there's that nice notation of the life of a cherry tree from fall through spring and the birth anew of that which is beauty, those lovely pink and white blossoms that come from the cherry blossom itself. Mm-hmm. Nicely done, Jack. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jane, we're back on you.
Okay, well, the next one I'm going to put up is a piece by Poetic Picasso. It's called The Haunting Shadow. And that, too, has an audio. So let me put this in.
A myriad of impregnated screams rack my little brain, penetrating through my impenetrable walls, a colossal leviathan with the force of a sonomic rage. 2,000 demons busting through the walls of my fate and sanity, releasing the Medusan tremors of the collapsing earth in the blood-sucking leeches of ravenous vampires conjured in the fiery dungeon of my piercing pain. A psychedelic odyssey, psychotic madness, shackled fears, molten hot lover, quondam delusions, quasi-dreams, tattered pieces, a fountain of blood. Disturbing soliloquies, perilous thoughts, a destined solitude, a harrowing zenith, a diluted pleasure dome, a destructive threshold, a coiling double helix, the winding paths of horror. I am an exiled man chained to a heavy rock, on a lone mountain peak, a wretched beast to himself, reduced to the memories of his forsaken love. Before the bloodbath of the scavenging ravens, in mercy of my tormentor, who deemed me a prisoner of my harsh punishment, I have been fully stripped of my bloody garments, leaving my body naked to the undeniable truth and unbearable suffering. I am a condemned man, the face of the beast that I fear and loathe, and my love for her is forever my eternal condemnation. I am tormented every day by the haunting shadow of the beautiful woman who was once my bride. Am I bloody insane? Oh, am I bloody insane?
Frank, thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It's very much appreciated. All right, Pam. Dun, dun, dun,
dun. Yeah, that was a wonderful SoundCloud. This is just a great dark rite. I like how it's all about the psychological terror of someone going insane. A wonderful use of the word Leviathan. A colossal Leviathan with the force of a tsunami rage. I also really liked a psychedelic odyssey, psychotic madness, shackles, fears, molten hot lava, quantum delusions, quasi-dreams, tattered pieces, a fountain of blood. You really, to me, I get the whole idea of someone who keeps being pulled back and forth between their nightmares and reality. And before the bloodbath of the scavenging ravens and mercy of my tormentor who deemed me a prisoner of my harsh punishment, I had been fully stripped of my bloody garments, leaving my body naked to the undeniable truth. I like that, you know, leaving my body naked to the undeniable truth, the whole idea of realizing that I am that condemned man, and I have been condemned by the evil within myself. I also really like that this ended with the question, am I bloody insane? You know, and that whole idea of what is actually part of the imagination and what is something that outside forces have manipulated and gaslighted. You know, it leaves a kind of hanging open to there could be other possibilities. And so just an excellent dark rite and very well done.
Thank you very much, Diane. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought this was an excellent piece, a great audio, as always, you know, but I thought it had wonderful imagery and it was really well expressed. And I thought it was an awesome take on the chosen prompt, which was he who makes a beast of himself gets rid of the pain of being a man. And, yeah, I can see it. Absolutely. So definitely a great job, Frank, and thanks so much for sharing that with us tonight. You know, great job.
Well said, ladies. I'm going to go right into, I guess, the middle of this. Kind of hit that. I am an exiled man. Chained to a heavy rock on a lone mountain peak. A wretched beast himself. Kind of hits taking the notion of Prometheus and driving home a little bit more of that which went on with the tale itself, but also driving it in a different direction with the beautiful woman who was once my bride. Am I bloody insane? Hey, after what you unleash as the first few stanzas, the thought of that which was really done, the screams racking your brain, the 2,000 demons bursting through the walls, the fading sanity, blood-sucking leeches, ravenous vampires, the fiery dungeon, all hit at the unrelenting pain that walks through a mind, especially going through what you got here, the scavenging raisins, fully stripped garments, body naked, undeniable truth, unbearable suffering. There is a nice notion that you run in this of what it feels like to be pained on that edifice because you deign to, say, curse the gods or go against the gods, so to speak. And maybe the idea is, I am tormented every day by the haunting shadow of the beautiful woman who was once my bride. That kind of, is there a second thought to that actual angle? The woman going over to one of the gods, so to speak, and that is the real purveyor of the pain which now envelops you totally. We can then receive it. Mostly done, Frank. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jane.
Okay. Well, the next piece I'm going to put up is by Arcana Amore, and it's called The Kiss of Immortality. And again, I have a sound clip for that, so let me hit that button. It is bouncing all over, hitting buttons left and right. Here we go.
Leathery wings dance twilight skies in search of forlorn veins to drain, seeking be sated with salacious supremacy, inflicting sufferance with lachrymose laments to poison the hearts of languished affection. As bat he prowls the corridors of darkness, as mist he transcends his human guise, as wolf he stalks the windswept wilderness, whilst grieving graveyards mourn empty coffins, he flows between realms with deadly disdain. They can't resist his hypnotic potence, ensnared in his piercing, persuasive stare, to follow dominant seductive commands and submit to be ravaged in seeping seduction, impregnated with sin to create corruption. Restraint subsides beneath a tainted touch, as hands explore willingness with wanton desire, moaning with pleasure beneath his embrace, whilst penetrating flesh with a bitter caress that weeps demise in scarlet streams. A promise of immoral immortality beckons in hedonistic dreams of deviant desire, with enduring, ageless, undying facades to wield the carnal plague of greed, enveloped in evil to haunt the shadows, to spread his coven of occult devotion with harems of writhing submissive harlots, lording over lustful legions of Lamia, all baying for scraps of faded attention, to feel the bliss of his kiss once more.
Great read, Arcana. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam, this kind of walks your dungeon mentality. What you got?
Yeah, I do like it. I do like it. Wonderful. Wonderful use of imagery and language. It has, you know, all the elements you expect in a classic, you know, vampiric type tale. It's got the darkness, the sensuality. I like he flows between realms with deadly disdain. Like, I think that adds an extra depth, kind of like Interview with the Vampire, how, you know, like Lestat really just had that, at least I think it was Lestat, if I remember right, had that disdain for humans. And there's a real, like, I like how he brings into the element of not only the seduction and the sensuality, but the darkness of someone who has the personality of a cult figure. Also, on a technical level, there's some wonderful use of alliteration, lording over lustful legions of Lamia. You know, I can't find any others, but I know there was some other ones. That was it. Seeking be sated with salacious supremacy. I like when, like, part of what makes a vampire character sexy is confidence. Like, you never find but I think that's true of men in general, but you never find that an unconfident vampire is sexy. You need to feel as if they feel they are in themselves gods and worthy to be followed. So just an excellent dark rite and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, you got any blood left?
Do I have anything clever left? What did you say? My
blood.
Ears are not working. Yes, of course I do. I think this is an excellent tale. Great imagery and wonderful use of alliteration throughout. And Arcana seems to use alliteration in a lot of his poetry. So I kind of like look for it here and there. And he never disappoints with that. But I thought it was just really a very enjoyable piece, you know, enjoyable as in a dark rite, yes. So well done, Arcana, and thank you so much.
Yeah, it's good he started doing a SoundCloud.
Yes.
Listen with his own voice instead of just reading his words this way. The real intimacy of the piece comes through. And it does walk in a vampire, but it walks in the really, really darker side. The thought of supremacy in the moment, the only thought to what is necessary is his needs in the moment. And even though there is a touch of the thought to sensuality here, that in and of itself only walks a singular path. I did like that, the back end of this, the thought of legions of Lamia. I think it was in Greek myth, they used to be the eaters of babies, and then they kind of transformed over the centuries into spirits, demons. So to feel the bliss of his kiss once more is that kind of notation of offering up a little bit more of the power that surges within his veins alone, because after all, he is the master. And they are just but those entities that are used to help in feeding the master. And this walks definitely in the angle of nothing but pure, the pure entity, which is the vampire itself. Nothing more, nothing less. You know, I like it because he drops in as Daffy prowls the corridors of darkness, as Mystic transcends human guise, as Wolfie stalks the windswept wilderness, whilst grieving graveyards mourn empty coffins. So there is a nice touch, that empty coffin, the rise of those gone. He flows between realms with deadly disdain. Disdain for and those who walk within it, because he is solely on the dark end of things. I always have that touch that submit to be ravished and seeping seduction, impregnated with sin, he create corruption. A nice touch there, because that is the only other angle that works well within this too, that sort of at least having some semblance around him that walked within his own field, that which he generates and can dispatch at will if they so piss him off. I see that Arcana. All right, Jean. We're back to
Keaton Doki. Okay. Well, and again, as a piece by Pretty Bird. I want to put up her SoundCloud next. So, here we go. Oh, wrong button. There we go.
So many pages and years of wasted time by Pretty Bird. I have over 1,000 books. I haven't read near half of them, but I learned how to make paper that might inspire someone else to ink words or thoughts or art or anything that is more creative than I seem to be. Too thick, too thin, too mottled, too plain, I mix the slurry by hand just to glean a moment of good enough in a finished product that no one ever sees but me. I learned to sew text blocks by hand like I'm going to actually bind my own journals, but I haven't written in the 152 multi-sized notebooks I already own. They're just too pretty to ruin with my broken ramblings and unclear verbiage. I own full sides of leather to forge the kind of old-world, hand-bound, rustic beauty that I imagine our ancestors held close and whispered their secrets in quilled calligraphy. They're still in shipping boxes, pristine. People have lined up waiting for them, but the idea of them far exceeds the finished product because I haven't finished anything yet, but I will, eventually. Eventually, I will take my beautiful paper that only became beautiful after months of not looking at it, and I will take those finished text blocks that are imperfectly sewn in a hard learning curve that no one will ever see through that hardcover exterior. Eventually, I'll bind them all in superhero nerd book cloth that I have made by hand because not everyone likes leather. Yes, everything is touched and molded and tested and loved in every stage by someone who cannot see the beauty in anything she does, until it's far enough away to forget that I hoped it would turn out differently. I will never understand the interest in things I do, but that collection of journals that keeps growing includes other artisans' handmade varieties that are too precious to sully. It's the imperfections that are most lovely. Deckled edges and cockled pages speak to my soul and all the care two hands took to make every single one. Maybe I once thought I would print my words on those handmade pages in a handbound book. But how could I sell such a labor of love, and who would want to pay what I think it's worth when I think it's worthy at all? I read my favorite books over and over, but can't seem to remember writing words that look back at me in all their purged honesty, averting my eyes from the shameless, unfiltered outpouring like I had some nerve forcing people to read such flatter. I have over 1,000 books. I haven't read near half of them, but I learned how to make paper that might inspire someone else to ink words or thoughts or art or anything that is more creative than I seem to be.
Great read, Pretty Bird, and thank you very much for that. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right, Jane. We're on to you. Aha.
I think this is a really well-penned piece. I love how she brought it full circle, the first stanza and the last stanza, you know, being the same. And I really do enjoy what she put into the middle of this. I mean, all the way through. You know, wonderful thoughts, and they were all well expressed. Pretty Bird always has a great way of wording things and making them, want you to read them. Making them, I want you to read them. I make sure I was talking English. Well, kind of. And I think it was just a beautiful set of thoughts. Each stanza was wonderful. I don't know. I own full size of leather to forge kind of old world hand-bound rustic beauty that I imagine our ancestors held close and whispered their secrets in cold calligraphy. They're still in shipping boxes. Just, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, pretty bird. Yeah, but you're really nicely done. I enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you, Jean. How about you, Pam?
Well, first of all, it's a beautiful SoundCloud, as always. A wonderful read. I really like the idea. Well, first of all, I can really relate to, having a bunch of books and only reading like less than half of them. I think it's really fascinating, the idea of making paper by hand. I used to actually make scrapbooks out of wood. Me and a friend of mine used to. To me, it's all about finding that something that inspires other people to, be the best they can be, while at the same time, learning and growing yourself and looking back and saying, okay, what were the things I collected and what were the things that I did that meant something, that could mean something to other people, and what are the things that are just meaningless? I do like the nod towards, I read my favorite books over and over, but can't seem to remember writing words that look back at me in all the purged honesty, averting my eyes from the shameless, unfiltered outpouring. I think that oftentimes favorite books speak to us because there is that outpouring of emotion. Really a wonderful, thoughtful write all the way through, and really well done.
Well said, ladies. I think there's a duality in this. The thought of having over 1,000 books, I haven't read half of them, but I learned how to make paper that might inspire someone else to think words or thoughts or art and anything as more than creative than I seem to be. There is a careful note in that, because this hint hits at the thought of an artisan, the person who actually pulls all of that together so that someone else might be able to use them in that manner. The thought of making the paper by hand, sewing the text blocks, the thought of the notebooks already owned, too pretty to ruin with my broken ramblings and unclear verbiage. The thought kind of hits on that notion. I can produce that which others use so well, but maybe it's the idea of being too timid, understanding the nature of that which you do in the moment, which is own full-sized leather forge, the kind of old-world, hard-bound, rustic beauty that I imagine our ancestors come close. So there's a nice, and having shipping boxes pristine, full of products to be used, from the glue down to the binding, down to the hard forge you're going to use to back the leather with, and everything else that goes into producing that which you consider such a beautiful product, something that can be enjoyed, looked down upon over the years, yet you're afraid to part with them just as much as you're afraid to impart the words upon that which you consider that beautiful to begin with. And that hits on the understanding. I know what I can do this way, but I don't know what I can do the other way, because I'm too afraid to dip the quill into the well and explore that avenue itself. All right, Jean, back to you.
Okie doke. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm not going to cram another poem into the tail end of the show. We have, 4 minutes left? Yeah, four and a half minutes left. It doesn't make sense to put another poem up and then race through it and race through the comments. But excellent poetry tonight. Great company. You know, thank you, Rex, for co-hosting with me. Thank you, PM, for calling in and hanging out all night. It was a lot of fun.
Being nice to meet you. I'm having a central now.
I'm sorry? My ears are not.
You can actually read the board instead of having it sent to it and then relayed over Messenger.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad you sent the text last time. As I was, it gets a little screwy for me because, you know, going from the computer to the phone, I'm totally like, what? And then I have to, like, kind of do it. I probably do it the hard way, but it's the only way I know how. But, but it's good to have PM back and have her back in order where she knows what she's doing and she doesn't have to think twice about it. And, you know, we don't have to figure it out either. But, you know, I mean, it keeps me from napping on air. You know, I mean, it's good stuff. But, yeah, Pam, all kidding aside, it is good to have you back and to know that you're
going to
be handled.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have quite a few carryovers, just so that way everybody is aware. I have one by Jack Tomkovic. I have one by Dex Bailey, which is from last night. Joseph Moon, S. Sharp, and I have two up by Kay Hartless now. So I will put those on next Friday's board. And it was fun hanging with you guys tonight, as always. Great poetry, everybody. Thanks for sharing with us, as always. Very enjoyable. And, yeah, that's about it for me. Anybody want to say anything, Pam? What's going on tonight, on After Midnight?
I have no idea. We're Parks Center, Park Saint, and off the top of my head, I can't remember what the topic is.
Okie dokie.
Yeah.
I'll give you time to catch
like
up. Sure. I just thought we'd take it, like, the next show. That was all.
Okay.
That's why I went there.
Yeah, oh, that's good point.
And
good point.
Tomorrow night we have Exploring Ex-Phrasis with Captain
Actually,
V2.
It's Gray's show tomorrow.
Is it Gray's show tomorrow?
Yep, tomorrow is Bad
Company. Okay, well, tomorrow's Bad Company with Gray Eyes Smith. Woo-hoo.
Yes, it is.
Nice job. And then we have Sunday with Rex. Rex, what do you got going on Sunday?
Notes in Passing, Alan White. Drama from 50 Years with Yes. And in the early days, he played with Lennon on Instant Karma and Imagine. And he also played on George Harrison's debut album, All Things Must Pass. So,
Very nice. Okay. Well, that's wonderful. And, yes. Okay, everybody. Well, that about sums us up. We're down to about, about a minute. Maybe a little more. Maybe a little less. And thanks again, everybody. And we all, I learned what tomorrow's show was and all this week. And it was different. But anyway, y'all have a great night. And thanks, Rex. Thanks, Pam.
All right.
And I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Have a nice night, everybody.
Good night. Good night, everybody.
Bye, gang.